I forgot to tip the postman. I forgot to tip the postman. I guess I was thinking about something else. The postman is very reliable. He's there almost every day, and I appreciate him. When I was little, our postman had a long white beard, and I used to wonder if there were spiders in it. See little spiders in there hanging out? They look happy drinking tea or something. Can you think of any other federal employees that you have to tip? He's somebody. Taxes and everything, I guess. All these people that you do. I don't mind doing it, though. I don't mind giving a little gift to my letter carrier every year. And they say thank you. They have a little note and they send it back. And I don't mind doing that because I love it the way just mail appears there and visits me. In right in my postal slot. I have one of those mailboxes. It's not a box. My whole house is the box. You understand the way it's set up. And there's a slot in the door. So the whole, it's like the whole house is a mailbox or a suggestion box. No one's ever used it for that. I should put some cards at the curb. And people write down and say, you know, next time I think it'd be better if you, and then just drop it in my giant suggestion box of a house. I don't mind that. Oh, I'm so glad that you could come by for a visitation today. I call it visitation. Like it's a hospital or we're spirits. And we're visiting a medium. Hello, medium. Oh, I'm no longer a medium. I'm reaching middle age. And all right, well, you know, we all, our bodies change. We don't even have bodies anymore. That's why we're spirits. And we've come because you are playing, I believe the full name is Luigi board. Yes, I always order the Luigi board when I go to my favorite deli. And he says, yes, I get, which one, do you want the mortadelle, yes or no? Just move the little, it's not a cursor. I don't know what you call it. It has a little pot of mustard on it. I don't think. No meat today. All right. Or cheese? No. Well, there's nothing else on the platter except some olives. I don't mind having some olives. Whatever you bring me is fine. I wish I could gift some to the letter carrier. What would they like? It's difficult to send them a letter because they're so inclined to take it to someone else. They go, no, no, no. That letter's for you. It can't be. It can't be. Waiters are like that, too, saying, no, that soup is for you. No, sir, it cannot be. For I am the waiter. But the waiter and the postal carrier carrier must also have soup and letters brought to them. And that's why I like to go to you. That's my new business idea. It doesn't involve money, unfortunately. I come to you and we visit. All right. Now, so I don't need it yet, Hardy. I'm not an old person or infirmed or I'm not in the hospital. Yes, but you might need it later. Well, then do it then. I can't. I might not be available. So I will visit you now, and I will bring you companionship and stories and ice chips. Well, my mouth isn't dry. Well, it might be in the future. Again, Hardy, I don't see how will any of this keep. We're going to convert it, and I'm going to show you how to do it. It's just like a really long YouTube video, into memories. Now, how can I convert this into memories? You're doing in it. You're doing it right now. You do it compulsively. You do it without knowing and make memories of these things. You wish you hadn't sometimes. Sometimes you turn it off. Let's say you're waiting in line at Kmart in 1989. And you go, you know what? I don't want this one anymore. I want to shut it off. And so while you're there, you stop noticing things and you go into a sort of fog or dream state. Or some people call it a fugue state because you... Not fugue steak. That's Bach's favorite food. But anyway, you don't want to take in any information because you're afraid you're going to make memories out of it. Right? So I don't want to do this. You got to be careful what you bring to the place that makes brass, that coats it in bronze. Like baby shoes. People bring baby shoes or baby teeth, they're part of any kind of part of the baby that fell off, umbilical stump or something, to a foundry. I guess it's like a foundry. and they'll make a bronze version of your baby or the part that you bring. I guess they can, maybe they can extrapolate and say, if you could bring us the umbilical stump, we have a computer program that will extrapolate the rest of the baby, and we'll be able to figure out what it looks like, and we'll give you a portrait of what that baby will look like at 40. That's so fun. They can do that in utero now. They'll do 3D ultrasounds, and they'll age progress them. So it looks like you have a, we'll show you the middle-aged person right now in your womb, is in there right now as an older person. Can you think about life that way? It's really unusual. You look at your grandparents and you say, once they were infants, and before that, you keep progressing them, and you go, ooh, I don't even, now I'm thinking about my great-grandparents in a way I wasn't prepared to. But oh my goodness, life, you can't not look in the little corners. Oh, you have to explore the place. You have to look around. If you were dropped onto an island, much the way that the Gilligan's Island family, I call them a family because really they were, I feel like they became that close. Well, just working and living together every day like that, stuck on an island, making a TV show, you become family. And, but in that situation, you've got to look in all the caves. Now, in some of the caves, you're going to find maybe a gentleman that thinks it's still World War II. But, you know, not looking there is not going to help. It's not going to help to not explore these crevices of the mind, your Gilligan's Island mind. You got to go in there. So I guess I am stranded here with these others, and these others being facets of my personality. We all inside us have that. The professor, or the, what was the one that was the killer? He was a killer, but he turned his life around. He was an alcoholic. That might not be Gilligan's Island. I don't know. But any group of people, it can apply to. If you're stuck in an elevator, I immediately look around. Whenever I'm, and this happens frequently, I'll be stuck in an elevator. And the elevator's stuck, and you go, oh, great, again. And you'll think, well, now we have to start a sort of little simple society. And I always have a speech ready. I make it almost immediately. Sometimes while the elevator's starting up again, because it won't be really long enough for the speech to matter. But I will say, fellow citizens of this tiny room, and that's what it is. It's a tiny room that moves, an elevator. Bing! And they're all gone. That's all right. That's why you don't need to finish stories, really. And the people who understand this are the people who make soap opera. I don't know whether to call them serial or soap operas. If you don't know the difference between soap or serial, I'm not coming to your house for breakfast and then a shower. But they're called either soap operas or serials, daytime dramas or something. But they're what they are. They call them serial, not like Captain Crunch, which also is progression of scenarios and little chapters and a longer story. But that's why they call it that, because it's serialized one after another. So what's going to happen to so-and-so this week? Jessica Palmer. I know that's not one I made. I'm putting a bunch together. The portmanteau family. And what happens to them every week? Soap opera, serials, and the story never resolves, does it? It just keeps going. It goes so far that sometimes they'll lose actors. And they'll say, today, playing the part of Mickey Horton is someone entirely different. You know, they'll have to get used to that. There's a new one. That'd be interesting if that happened in your life, wouldn't it? I always tease people, go, there's been three Hardy Whites, have you noticed? They go, oh, I thought it was the same person. No, there's been three different ones of us. I feel like that, though. I feel like I went through stages in my life. Certainly, if you base it on facial hair and weight, because my weight and my facial hair, they fluctuate wildly because of the time travel. It messes up my metabolism. And so sometimes I have a long white beard and I'm heavy. Sometimes I'm thin and have a long white beard or clean shaven. And other times I'm not. So it just, it depends on any given day what sort of 19th century fringe writer I look like. And I try to sport a bunch of different looks. I don't do it on purpose. It's just what happens is that you'll pass out or something, and you wake up a couple years later, and you say, what has happened to this place? They go, Mr. Von Winkle. Yes? Are you Rip Von Winkle? Yes, I am Rip Von Winkle. Well, you have been asleep for a very, very long time, and things have changed. I go, that's why my beard is so impossibly long. We thought you one of the Smith brothers. Ah, the cough drop barons. I don't know that they were literally barons. Oh, no, I used the word like mogul. They made a lot of money on cough drops. Indeed they did, the brothers Smith. Indeed they did. And we both nod. And I say, are you familiar with the brothers Johnson? And they say, no. Did the brother discuss it? I go, no. It's another set of brothers. They go, oh, I see. Yes, these were they were musicians. And this conversation goes on for a long time. I love all conversations because I learn something, and sometimes I can make memories out of them. I'm looking for things like that. I'm always looking to make memories, and making memories are just like putting up fruits or vegetables. By putting up, I mean canning, and by canning, I mean jarring. And by jarring, I don't mean surprising. I mean to put in jars, to preserve by boiling it, putting it in there, somehow magically guaranteeing there's no bacteria in there, sealing it with probably sealing wax, which I used to think was used for ceilings, but it's not. It's used for letters so people don't open them without authorization. And then putting it up on the shelf and say, that is some Aunt Bee pickles I made last season. And they were fresh, and I experienced the cucumbers, but they would not last unless I converted them into memories. And like I say, usually I'm doing that without thinking about it, making memories. So these memories sort of make themselves, and I'm almost at the mercy of their production, as if I inherited a factory from my family, and it runs regardless. They say, all your job is, Hardy, is to sort of just get out of the way and let the memory factory keep going. And what is the point of it? What are we making these for? Have we explored overseas markets? And then you realize that you need sometimes to explore overseas markets to see how other people live, to see how they sell their trinkets and items and memories. In some countries, they sell their memories by converting them into notes and playing them on an organ, or making them into chocolates. Can you guess what country?
Austria?
Austria? All right, yes. That's one. What country converts their memories into a delicious pizza? And Italy? Italy? I was thinking New Jersey. But you can say Italy, a lot of people eat pizza now, though. Pizza is international. It used to be, it's originally, I think like all things that have dough, is from China. And it was originally a large noodle. Say there's a dish on the menu that is deceptively filling. It's called one noodle entree. And it's one noodle, but it's a very large one. It's really the size of a serving tray. And on top of that noodle is all the sauce that you would need. And then on top of that, sometimes they put other things. Is this right? Yes. How do you eat this noodle? With sticks? You could eat it with sticks or with hands or with your friends. Oh, that sounds fantastic. And so these ideas would pass through the ancient world like gunpowder or hotel, the idea for a hotel. That's got to come from someplace, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. I think that, you know, you can stay in my house if you pay me. That's probably very old. And it was originally used on family. So I'd like to stay with you because you're kin. All right. And it is like staying with family, isn't it? Yes, it is. And you and I, we're all Marriotts, aren't we? Yes, we are. We're all in the Marriott clan. Can I see your tartan? I don't have... Well, let me tell you something. There's one great equalizer, isn't that? And that's greed. Oh, we can all agree on that. Oh, my goodness. If you help me out, if you give me something, probably if you just keep giving it to me, that's the thing, isn't it? The golden goose or cow all through history, men and women and others have come up with these myths of an animal or something that can give you all the gold or wealth or anything you want, and how corrupting that is. Isn't it? I don't know. Yes, it's a small dog, and it poops gold nuggets. Really? Mm-hmm. Do they need any processing? Oh, good Lord, yes. You might not even know they're gold. You have to go through them. Oh, how's that done? Well, when the dog does its business, just pick it up and just rub it between your fingers. Just keep doing that. You might have to do it for days or years before you get the gold. Okay. Everybody go home and do that. Oh, I'm not trying to trick you. Friends, I'm glad you came over. Now, I know you're saying I got in through the mail slot. How is that possible? Have you seen the X-Men? Sometimes, if you're exposed to something or you have a specific gene, I don't know what it is. I'm sure it has a name. You'll find that later in life you start getting powers, and one of them is to make your body into something very soft, like a dough or a paste. Not something so crumbly it's going to fall together, apart, but something that'll stick together with a little resiliency. And then you can ooze through mail slots like a cuttlefish or an octopus or something like that. And you can go into little places that you didn't think were possible. When you were large and obvious, when you wanted to be noticed. But as you get older, maybe you say, I don't want to be noticed so much. Maybe now I want to blend in a bit. I want to be camouflaged a bit because I would like to explore places without being noticed. I would like to notice things without being seen. I would like to surreptitiously gather memories from fields like it was somebody else's property and I was taking pecans or psychedelic mushrooms off of their property. I'm like, get out, run, everybody, run. Brr! Run, here comes they. I thought it was one of their bulls. It's a wild boar, which is even worse. And we all ran and ran through the bushes. And then I tripped and fell in something. And I fell at the bottom of this great hole. And there I looked up and I could see the moon. It was a very bright night, and I could see the wild boar looking down. He couldn't get me in the hole, and I realized I had fallen into a grave, an open grave, but there were no cemeteries around there. Why had someone dug a grave out in the woods on that night? Ooh, and there was scary noises. And then I looked up, and not only there was a boar standing there, but there was somebody else standing there, and they were wearing a top hat. I could only see they were backlit by the moon, so I couldn't see who it was standing there. Me laying in an open grave. I've seen enough, spirit. I've seen enough. Wake me up. I'm so sorry for my past transgressions. I know that I answer emails so slowly, and I deserve to die. But it's really not, I'm not being rude or ungrateful or anything. I just, it's difficult for me sometimes to stop being so self-conscious that I'm able to really even respond to communications because I second-guess myself to paralysis. It's just part of my personality. I'm reluctant to call it a personality disorder. Oh, great spirit who is standing over me in this open grave. I'm going to go ahead and get out of it now. If you don't mind, I'm going to climb up out of it. Can I just talk to your face? First of all, I'm not afraid of you, ghost of something past or future. And it's all, and the, one of them, this is a funny thing that the ghost of Christmas past told me one time. He said, do you know there's only really one ghost? I said, what do you mean? He said, past, present, future, it's really the same ghost. And I go, no, it's not, because I think they're all different. They're all different types of ghosts and everything. I've seen them. He goes, no, they appear different because of the perspective of the Scrooge looking at them. But in reality, they're the same. I'm going, you are blowing my mind. He said, now, I'm telling you that, but now we have to go ahead and just act as if they are separate ghosts, because that's one of those truths that is pointless. You know, it's true, but it's so true that it transcends any of our experience, doesn't do us any good. It's one of the wonderful, useless truths, right? Like if you were, I know sometimes I'll be in, I'm going to visit listeners a lot of times, and a lot of times they're getting high in their dorm rooms, and they'll say to me, Hardy, is the universe is all, what if we're all very small and we're all, we don't even know it, but the universe is a very tiny thing, and it's part of some, you know, giant or anything like that. That's an idea that's been out there for a long time. And I'll say to the students, that doesn't matter. Why would that matter? So it doesn't even matter. You're wasting your time. You could be learning something. I said, you could be learning how to, I said, how many of you know how to play the saw? No hands go up. I say, how many of you would like to learn how to play the saw? No hands go up. And I said, what if I asked you this question? Why not? And it got real quiet, and then everyone left. And I was there, I had a lot of time then to be alone with my thoughts. And I thought, why is it that the young people today might not want to play the saw? I go, because I'm pushing it on them so heavily. Why don't I just demonstrate how exquisite and wonderful the saw is? And so I started playing some traditional rake and scrape Bahamian music down there. John Canoe. And they said, what are you doing? And I said, friend, I'm trying to get you excited about something. If you're not going to play the saw, there's other things that you can do too. Do you know how many needle crafts there are? Just like, you know, from regular sewing to needlepoint, petty point. They have now have quantum point. I don't know if you know about Q point. And it's really, really small. And it's nanotechnology. And what you're doing is you're doing little bitty pillows. And the pillows have some type of nanomedical application. But what they're getting people to do is they're crowdsourcing this, is you're willing to quantum needlepoint these little tiny pillows, and then they'll be used in neural surgery to connect what to take the pillows. And I don't fully understand how this works, but they heal neural networks, and they're able to sort of, soften some memories so that some things are easier to think about without re-experiencing the pain. Because, you know, a lot of memories come with, there was a ride at Disney World, and I think it was called Journey to the Moon, then Journey to Mars, then Journey to a Strange Dimension. I got really more, as we got more sophisticated with our science, so did the ride. But the gist of the ride is that you sit in a chair that bounces around a lot, so you think you're moving, right? And it was ingenious, really, because you weren't going anywhere, but you felt as if you were. Isn't that lovely? I like that. I like to feel like I'm going somewhere, at least. I like to feel like I'm traveling somewhere. And even if it's just some sort of rubber roller in the seat of my chair that's making me feel as if gravity is being pulled away from me. If that's what it takes, is somebody putting a rolling pin on my bottom to make me feel as if I've lost the grip of Earth's gravity, and I am now able to soar out there, let my mind soar. Oh, I love to drop these restraints, drop the shackles of my imagination. Don't tell me what to think. Or, let's put it this way, tell me what you think all you want, and I will nod in agreement, and I will insist that I am thinking that. But I am absolutely going to defy you, and I shall be the master of my own internal life and the things that are going on in my head no one has to know about. I don't have to report them. I don't have to do... Have you ever seen police? A lot of people say, oh, police are always beating up people or hitting them. Yeah, but every time they do that, then they have to do a little book report on it. I pity that, right? You say, oh, gosh. You know, if it was just about going out there and doing something... But then you say, oh, now you need to write, you have to put it into words. You know, I don't know what to do. Sobs, man, shoved man. I don't know. Right? That's how my report would be. Or I would say, well, have you ever wondered what it's like to deal with somebody who just shoplifted gum? Well, I have. If you know what it's like to have a little brother, you know how frustrating it can be to get along with people. Well, sometimes you have to compromise, and that's not so easy to do. I have a collection of dolls that I really like, and so I don't let my little brother in my room because I'm afraid that he will destroy them, and some of them are very valuable. One day he did get in, and he took one of the heads, and he melted it down. I had it bronzed even, but he took it, and he took it to a foundry, and he melted it down, and he brought it back to me in a big lump. It was about the size of a softball, but all jaggedy. It looked nasty. I said, "What is this?" And he said, "It's a giant bronze umbilical stump." And I said, "You are sick." And he said, "You are sick. You're both sick." And then we made each other throw up on each other. Well, then, you might say, how do I repair my relationship with my little brother if he's going to destroy all my collectibles like that? And I say, this is one of the... I'm going to give you some... First of all, that was really excellent. That was quite excellent. And I'm just going to give you, before I give you your score, I'm just going to tell you a couple things I liked about it and a couple things I think would have made it a stronger speech and presentation. One, I loved your enthusiasm. I loved how animated you got when you were talking about your little brother. I loved some of your hand gestures, your gesticulating. None of it looked forced. It was all very natural. It wasn't over the top. So I like your composure. I like the way you hold yourself on stage. You might have said "well" a couple more times than I'd like, but that's okay too. A lot of that was endearing. And I'm not sure the story went anywhere. I think maybe there's something wrong with you, with the way you think. Something basically, you're different in a wrong way that you probably will be rejected by the group. No, that's not true at all. No, you're fine. Just the way you told it was fine. And what makes it extra fine is that you are not being evaluated. This is not a competition. I'm not the judge at some sort of 4-H speech competition. And even if I were, I don't think I'd give people a list of things I didn't like. I would just give them a harsh score and leave them wondering. When I was a child, I rarely said that phrase because I was already a child and I didn't know that I would survive childhood. And so I would... never say when I was a child, or I wouldn't even say when I was an infant because I had no real recollection of it. And so I was living more in the present because there was less past. I had fewer memories. My memories were foggy. I relied on my family to tell me what had happened. And I remember that was one of my first words I said when I was able to speak. I said, "What just happened? What just happened?" I don't know, maybe I was a couple years old, and the adult said, "What?" I go, I went through an experience for which I had no words. And so now that I am starting to have words, I'm not sure how to retrieve some of those memories because they're wordless. They transcend language. I had no way to characterize those experiences, so I have stored them in a different way. Once I found out that there was a difference between carrots and okra, I put them in different jars. But before that, I didn't know. I didn't know the difference between carrots or okras or severed human fingers, and I would put them all together in the same category. So those memories I have before language, I'm not even sure they really happened. I'm not even sure they're really there. Maybe I wasn't making them at the same rate. Ah, but once I learned language, then I could convert them all into a sort of poetry. I could make associations between words. I could use things like homophones to create an internal map. How's that? Oh, it's very easy. You know, words can mean the same thing and have, or sound the same and have totally different meanings. But we always associate them sort of poetically. I'll give you an example. There's an old expression, harebrained. H-A-R-E, hair, like a rabbit, like you got a brain of a rabbit. Boy, that's a harebrained scheme. You must have a very tiny, your brain capacity, the cranial cranial volume. You know what I'm saying? It's very low. A lot of people have misspelled it over the years. Right away, centuries ago, when the expression came out, they immediately started mishearing and misspelling it as harebrain, H-A-I-R, like you have the intellect of a brain the size of a hair follicle, a hair brain, or maybe it's covered with hair. That's disgusting. That's like a Star Trek thing. What is that, Captain? I don't know. Leave it alone. So harebrain and harebrain, and the image of harebrain with H-A-I-R gives you something, a visual image, right, of hair on a brain or a brain the size of a hair, and it takes you on this direction. And then you start equating rabbits with head hair and things like that. So just because something sounds alike, they become wedded in a way poetically in your head. And this goes on all over the place, making connections between things that are supposed to be disparate. And they're only connected because of wordplay, not because they essentially contain any similarities. Does that make any sense like that? And that'll happen too with other kind of memories where you recall a TV commercial or something like that. And all of a sudden, you're remembering something only because it's very tangentially connected, but you've made the connection stronger than it really is just because of chance. Oh, does it all come down to chance? Does it all come down to chance? Some of it does, I guess. I don't know. I don't have any answers for you. I've got a lot of things for you, but not enough, I guess. It's amazing. I can go to a cocktail party and they'll have snacks out, and they could have hundreds of snacks, and I'll still think, you know, they just don't have the one I want. Why can't anybody just put out a saltine? What is that? Are they poison now? I mean, I know there's lots of different kinds of crackers for cheese and everything, but often I just want, like, sometimes I just want a saltine or something. And I guess it's because of my blood sugar thing. A cookie will do, but that's too much. And so, out of everything that's offered, I always notice what is not there. Yes, that's like some sort of, that's the moral of the story, isn't it? Of the story of the man who forgot to give a Christmas present to the postman. Now you can see. They're all together, even the postman from the past with the spiders in his beard. Oh, that's good stuff. That is lovely things. The stories that we choose to tell children, too. I like the scary ones. You tell children, they go, you know that if you don't sleep well tonight, the skeletons of other children that have gone before, that have died in their sleep, will come and gather around your bed. And one of us, like that. That's the kind of stories that were told to me as a child, or a lot of nursery rhymes that had to do with royalty that would be murdered or something. There's always a lot of death in them because there's a little bit of death in life, but there's a lot of death in life, probably one death per life, almost. I think it's almost even. There might be one immortal walking around. You don't know. It could be you. Every teenager thinks it's them, but it might be one. There might be one immortal. They're probably looking pretty rough. So I'd look for somebody who's looking pretty haggard, because even if you're immortal, there's got to be repeated insults on your cells, I think, would leave you looking a little rough. And unless you keep rejuvenating, they've got some creams now that you rub on you, and they take the wrinkles out. They take years off your life. They have a way of taking your memories out, too. They disperse, like a water dispersal spray. Do they have that? It'd be great if they had, like, almost 40 formulas of water dispersal spray. I'd like to live in a world like that. I like living in the world with you. I love being your friend. And I guess we're not literally neighbors in that I can't. I think the definition of neighbor for me is, can I borrow something off of you? And The reason I don't return it is I'm like, well, it's just right here. The rake. I mean, what's the difference between keeping the rake in your garage and my garage? If you need our rake, you can just come and get it out of my garage. If I'm not home, that probably means that it's not time to rake. So that's the only reason I didn't bring it back. It's because we're neighbors. I mean, if we lived in different towns or something, I would have brought the rake back already. But I didn't even think. I know it's yours. You bought it. And you technically also bought my house and everything else. But that's okay. I don't know if I believe in ownership. I guess I do of my things. But I don't know what I believe about a lot, because I keep getting distracted by having to do things in life. Isn't that, I'll be going, thinking about a big idea. Go, what is life? And then the doorbell rings and I'm off on something totally different, trying to make up excuses for telling somebody why I don't need the limbs cut away from my house. Look, I got a fellow who does it. Who is it? Oh, why are you making me do this? Just, I don't want to use you. Why not? What's wrong with me? And then you get in a knife fight right at the door. You say, look, I feel like this is unjust or injust, because you came to me. I didn't ask you to come up on my doorstep and insist on cutting my branches. And he's like, well, you participate in this economic system. I'm out here trying to make an honest living, and you're not doing your part by hiring some of you to do a job that needs to be done. I said, sir, first of all, I like to get up on the roof. I don't. This is where my lie fell apart. And cut the branches away. And one of the reasons I don't do it is because those branches are, that's not an ordinary tree. And he goes, yeah, it's just a hemlock. It's like a trash tree. I go, it's not a trash tree. There's no such thing as trash trees, my friend. That tree is very special. And that tree contains the spirit of a family member who used to live in these parts, all right, on a farm. And they were ill-fated. A storm came one day, and the entire family was wiped out. And they were forced to bury each other, even though they were all already dead. Well, that alone is tragic. Because sometimes once you're dead, you just want to rest, and they couldn't. Their spirits were haunted until everybody was buried, and they decided to bury them each under a tree. They weren't under a tree at the time. They just buried them and put an acorn on them, on top of them. And then the rest the time took care of. If they put an acorn on them, why is there a hemlock there? Okay, it wasn't an acorn. It was a tiny hemlock pine cone. And you know, don't be difficult. You know what I'm trying to get at. Just go along with it and say, yes, sir, that sounds good. I'm not looking for an argument. That's why I think that's why I don't have any opinions. Just because I don't want to have to defend them. I think I have them inside. I just don't tell people what they are, because they're like, what's the point? They just make me defend my stupid opinions. I'll just smile and pretend I don't have them. Because I change all the time, too, because I'm always learning, and I'm full of doubt, and I'm always looking. So everything, my opinions aren't very fixed, right? And people want that. How will you know what side you're on? Well, I'm deciding. Will you ever decide? No. No, I'm sure I will perish before I've picked a side. I'm not sure what I believe. I'm sure I've got a few things figured out, but I don't know if I've got them figured out for the right reasons. You know what I'm saying? Like animals, they figure, okay, I know every time that doorbell rings, mail falls through the slot. I don't know what's why or anything or who's doing it. I just know correlation. I'm like that too. I know, I must know how to get fed. I keep getting fed, but I'm not sure that I'm really doing it. I'm not sure that all the things that are happening to me are really because I'm doing anything particular. I think I've gotten used to a certain pattern of behavior, but I couldn't tell you why it's happening. I think I just put that on there because I want to think that I've got it figured out. Yep, things are going pretty good. And everybody who thinks things are, if you lose weight, you write a book about weight reduction. If you make $1 million, then you write a book about how to make $1 million. Because a lot of people assume, because something happened to them, they must have made it happen. And so what they'll do is tell you all the techniques for getting there. Because they're absolutely convinced that it was willpower that let it happen. And maybe it was, kind of. But who knows? You know, it's a sort of survivor bias. You know, you can say you were successful because you were successful. But what if you hadn't been? What if things had gone differently? Oh, my goodness. So much might just happen to you. Isn't it wonderful to be like a driven leaf? And I don't mean one of those leaves that has a little tiny steering wheel on it, little people gliding around on it and driving them. Have you seen those? They have, now they'll have the driverless leaves. And you go, what is that? Like a driverless leaf, just floating through the air. Where is it even going? It's going to land on that water now. And now the leaf will become a boat. It's much like those duck boats. They can drive on the ground, and then they can ride on the water, because they're both a boat and a car. And if they just went that one step further and were a plane, they would have the three, they'd have be the triple threat vehicle. But I don't know. Maybe they just do two things, that leaf. And it hits that water and we go for a ride. And this is the ride we're on. And this is the story the captain told. We were all sitting around the campfire. And a man came on the radio. And he starts reading a book about how he forgot to tip the postman. And you realize by the end of the show that it's some sort of metaphor. It's some sort of metaphor for how life never makes a complete story. How we impose the idea of order, of cause and effect on things that are random, so that we don't feel completely lost. We tell ourselves that the incomplete map we have is an incomplete map, that there is something missing, but that what we have so far is accurate. But maybe it's a piece of a giant puzzle, a giant undoable puzzle that never ends and is never finished, because it's not truly a puzzle. Oh, is that why there's no edge pieces? I always look for the edge pieces. This is one of those puzzles that doesn't have any edge pieces. This is one of those puzzles that maybe there's no real pattern on it. Maybe every piece has its own pattern. How am I going to put this thing together? How will I see the big picture? Why do you think there is a big picture? Have you ever seen like a fractal or something? Have you ever looked at a fractal and thought, I want to see the big picture? That's absurd. You're already looking at the big picture. Well, the big picture looks like the little picture. There you go. You can keep moving backwards all you want, but you're probably just going to bump into something. I decided one time to circumnavigate the globe in my mind. There, I'm done. I'm glad I did it that way and not the walking or actual moving way. There was a fella that did do that. His name, Phineas Fogg. And he was a character who lived, and I say character because I believe he was fictional, at a time when people traveled in things like time machines and hot air balloons and jalopies and Asian junks, which is a type of boat. People back then in Asia would say, show me your boat. Here it is. It's in the harbor. It's lovely. What do you do? I trade in breadfruit. Conversation ends right there. I didn't know whether to say I'm not sure. I know what breadfruit, I kind of do. And I've seen it mentioned in old books about things that were transported on ships. But I guess they stopped bringing it. I don't know whether your international market might have it. Check there. Say, I'm looking for, do you have Tahitian breadfruit? They'll say, no, sir, we do not. Would you like to try this? And you go, what is that? It's a sopadilla. Okay. I don't know much about fruits or vegetables. I'm not a monger. I don't know much about words. I am not a poet. I am not a speaker. I am a speaker of words, but I am not a master thereof. My neighbor mows his lawn, but he is not a landscape architect. He is not a horticulturist. I am a speaker of one language, but I am not a good one. I just am driven. And that's because I was asked not to drive anymore. So please, come, we'll just drive you from now on. All right. I am driven to communicate. I'm driven to speak with you. I'm driven to try to connect because I have at my core a sort of empty loneliness. And I think that just comes from being a separate individual. I think that's a product of my biology. I think I sense that I am intimately connected to others and that we share some common experiences and feelings and that we are making a sort of problem for ourselves when we ignore our relationship and the effect that we have on one another and can have. And so I try to be aware of that. I try to open my eyes. And you know, sometimes I don't have the energy. I might be depressed or something. I might not have the energy to open my eyes, to take it all in, to see the world. And so then when I'm like that and I'm feeling kind of down, then I will paint my eyelids to look like my eyes are open. I learned this, I think it might have been Little Rascals. It could have been Three Stooges, it could have been anything. But what you do is you paint I've since seen, I think, like Mr. Bean or anything. You paint your eyelids to look like open eyes. So then when you nod off, like let's say you're driving or something and you fall asleep, your eyes look like they're open. So you won't get in trouble. And it'll look like you're still looking, still searching. And that's what I try to do. So even when I'm sort of given up and I'm not looking anymore and I'm not trying to notice things and I'm not trying to make memories because maybe I don't want to make memories because maybe it all is too painful or maybe I just don't have the courage to do it. I can't right now. I can't open my eyes and make these memories. I don't want this to be with me always. I just want to drift through it for a while. Can't I sleep through this part of the trip? Can't I just pretend I'm asleep? It's too scary. I'm just going to pretend I didn't wake up. I didn't hear anything. I'm going to pretend I didn't see what I saw. I'm going to close my eyes again. I'm going to try to go to some place in my mind. I'm going to try to escape. Oh, I felt like that friend. That's all right. When that happens, I'll stand here with you. And then at some point, though, I'm going to have to wake you because I'm going to need help. But I'll let you for a minute take a little break. We all need a little rest. And then we'll get back to it. It's an adventure. Oh, sometimes it's brilliant to open your eyes and say, let's explore this castle that we inherited. I know that it's probably going to be difficult at times. And yes, I went into the sub-basement. And yes, there were literally hundreds of human remains. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it wasn't the best thing in the world that we inherited this castle, but it also has some intriguing things. There's a mural, the origin of which I do not know, and the content of which is really kind of playful and also suggestive, and I encourage you to go have a look at it when you have time. But right now, let's deal with the bodies. In fact, let's not deal with the bodies. Let's have a party. We'll just have it outside. We can keep everybody... Hey, we're just asking y'all not to go in the sub-basement. That's all. If we could just stay out in the yard, the weather is nice, we've got tents, all the kegs and everything are outside, all the fun stuff's outside, so we're not even really going inside, and yet still people congregate in the kitchen. And I think they congregate in the kitchen because the kitchen was once a chapel. And so they say, hey, I feel natural, it feels natural to congregate here. Little what we thought was a baptismal font turned out to be some sort of island walk. So it's just a freestanding walk, and you can move around it. And we've done a lot of things with it. You don't have to. We've also kept soup in it. Just use it to serve like that. And people come up, and we dip a ladle in it. And we say, hey, you're part of the family now. And some people say, just for fun, put a little soup on my head. Okay. And you'll see people walking around with a little oyster cracker in their hair. I don't know if that's true or not. I want it to be true. I want our friendship to be based on some mutual memories that we have together. I think one of them is driving around like this. Are we driving together? Are you at home listening? I don't know. Are you traveling? We could be moving together, but we're together. This instant. This is the entire world right now, friends.
I'm not learning anything. I'm not doing anything. I think I'm just trapped here on a plane with you. Come up with a subject.
All right. I'll tell you. How about let's, Nine Men's Morris. I was in a gift shop at the Shaker Village. And there was a Nine Men's Morris game there. And I purchased it. I said, that's a fun game. It's very challenging. It's harder than tic-tac-toe. It's, I don't know, it's old-timey move pieces around game. It's very basic and it's very challenging, actually, this game. And I like games like that. Have you ever played it? It's very difficult to win against a computer. I guess there's a way to figure it out and there's tricks to it. But until you've played it maybe 100 times, you won't know what any of those tricks are. If you play chess, you realize that you're playing sort of the same chess game a lot, the same opening moves, and you can kind of tell where the game's going based on other games that have happened. And it is my understanding, and based on my own personal research and reading books, that a lot of the best chess players, and they've investigated this, are people that are able to memorize patterns, to basically memorize every possible scenario and know which one to do. Not people that are reasoning on the go and thinking on the go and coming up with a bunch of possibilities in their head like a computer every single game. No, no, no. The good ones recognize it and say, ah, we're playing this game. I'll do this next. So it's how many times you've played the game, maybe. How many scenarios you realize. How many stories you recognize. If you recognize the story, you might know what comes next. How is this one going to play out? I know that every time that mail slot makes that sound, chink-a-dink, something falls through it. Now, I don't know who did it, but I'm going to go looking for it and investigate. Then I'm going to find out who's putting that mail in that mail slot. Turns out it's the postal carrier. And it turns out he's a very nice fella, and I think his name is Mark. I think it's Mark. I hope it's Mark, because I'd like him to be Postal Mark. That would be funny to me. And now I know him so well that I give him a little gift around Christmas time. And I say, thank you, Mark, for bringing our mail every day. Because on days you're not here and you have a substitute, I get other people's mail because they're not as good at their job as you are. And so I appreciate what you do because I've come to depend on it. Because I order a lot of things online because I'm trying to fill some kind of empty hole with things because I've become acquisitive and materialistic because my soul is empty because I'm craving something. And so usually you're the one bringing it to me. I feel that kind of emptiness. What will I need now? Maybe I'm going to get some, I don't know, a guitar strap or something. That'll do it. That'll make me feel like a whole fulfilled human being. Oh my goodness. Maybe it will and maybe it won't. Maybe I can do that for you, friend. Do you remember how old you were when you found out about wood putty? Are you saying that I can put something in this hole and then smear it in there and then sand it and then stain it and it'll be absolutely indistinguishable from the rest of the surface? That I can just kind of fill it up, sand it even, and it's like there was never a hole there. Yeah. Well, how do I do that? Get some wood putty. But obviously you're using it as a sort of analogy for something, right? It's a metaphor. Yeah, it's metaphor is what the word you want. Sorry, I'm sorry. It's okay. It's easy to get. What is the wood putty? Are you going to tell me the answer? I can't. I cannot. All I can do is bring you into this home. All I can do is bring you into the visitation hour where we sit together at the Ouija board, where we move our hands around on the soprasada, and we say to each other, I wish I knew what was going to happen in the future. I wish I knew who the spirits were who inhabit my mind. I wish I knew how these memories got here. I wish I knew the inventory of all of my head, of all the things in there, the archive of my brain, because I know that I have reel after reel of film archive of things that have happened to me. Or that I imagine have happened to me. And they're in there. And I use them as references. And they create my reality. And that's how I've made my world. Is this library in my head. If you ever watched
the classic children's TV show, Land of the Lost. Occasionally they will go to the Sleestak future people. Enoch. And Enoch will sometimes take them to the Library of Skulls. And the Library of Skulls has a lot of Sleestak skulls around, and they all work like their little kiosk. Have you ever checked in when you self-check in at the airport and you can get your boarding pass and everything like that? Well, so you go up to one of the Sleestak skulls and you mash on one of the eyes with your thumbs, and it's you'll slide your passport in or whatever, what have you. And then it tells you some piece of information because it's a library. It's all the collected knowledge of a whole race of people who then lost that collected knowledge and became drooling, grunting, idiot reptile people. It happens. But they still have their library of skulls. And your library of skull is your head. And it is a sort of library. You know what kind of library your head is? You know one of those like satellite libraries that say we have our main library downtown, right? And then we have our second main library in the big suburb, yep. And in that small suburb, we have this little tiny building that must have 24 books in it. And it's really pointless. I don't even know why it's there, right? I don't know. It used to be a branch of a small... You know what I think it used to be is one of those photo things where you bring your film and they develop it. That's how small it is. But now it's a library, so-called. And you go there, I guess, and they have maybe like, you know, James Michener and P.D. James and just people with the word James in there. James Joyce, one book. That's all you need, really. That's they call it a library. That's your head. That's what your head is. You say, I've got whole things. There's things in my head of whole sections. There are entire disciplines and sciences that I don't even know exist, much less have any kind of volume in my head in that section. I'm a one-room library. I don't even have a second floor. There's no, but you can do a library lending. You can ask other people. Say, do you know anything about, boat husbandry? Is that a thing? You breed boats? It might be. You can ask someone else. And maybe they'll share that experience with you if you return it. Then you'll have to return it to their library. Friends, you don't have to return anything that I've given you. You can give it away or destroy it. I've already destroyed it. All right. I didn't expect that. But I was hoping you'd keep it. You could do something with it. No. All right. I was hoping, though. Oh, my friends, it's so great to spend any time at all with you. Isn't it? I'm so blessed. The more time goes on, the more blessed I am that I have anybody in my life like that that I don't know, friends that I've never met. And yet we connect as human beings across space and time through the strange medium of radio. It's allowed us to come together, to have friends when maybe we normally wouldn't, to feel a little less lonely. And it's real. Yeah, it's real. It's not fake companionship. I'm a real person who feels this way. And if I feel this way, imagine how many others must. If I feel lost and lonely, if I feel confused and inadequate, if I feel angry or puffed up or something, you do too, and that's great. Now you know there's some evidence that you're not alone. And yeah, that does mean the world to people and to me. I love knowing that I'm not the odd person out, that I'm not an outcast, that I am very much human, very much like other human beings, and that I'm probably doing my best. Who knows? But, my gosh, all I know is that I'm thankful that we're going to have every time together, that I'm still alive, and that I'm not in pain, and that also that a lot of the movies are not bad. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York, and online worldwide at WFMU.org. Thank you for listening, and I will see you again next week.